This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to be joined by Dr. David Lechner. David is the Chief Medical Officer of Blue Cross Blue Shield Montana. He's had a fascinating career. Looking forward to visiting with him. David, Dr. Lechner, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
I can. Thank you, Scott. Thanks for having me on. So, I am Dr. David Lechner. I am Chief Medical Officer for Blue Cross Blue Shield of Montana, one of the HCSC states, the five states of HCSC. I am a native Montanan and have spent most of my career in Montana, except for med school in Seattle, and residency in Spokane. So I'm a family practice physician foremost and had a 20-year continuity practice here in Helena, doing kind of the full range of family medicine back in the day when you still did all the hospital care. From ICU to obstetrics, and did the operative obstetrics for my group and then larger group as we joined in 1999. So, and along the way, stayed fairly busy just because I enjoyed, doing board work with different community boards statewide and then regionally. So locally, the Big Brothers Big Sisters Board, a home health board, advocacy group for healthy mothers, healthy babies, and then involved with different hospital-based boards, ultimately being department chair and then sat on the hospital board itself for many years. And around about 1999, the hospital started organizing the groups that were looking to become integrated. And and at that time I had a role on the board, and about a year later was elevated to the kind of the lead position, which was medical director over the joint group of physicians, about 60 physicians. And then over the next 10 years, 12 years, that as we evolved and grew and became fully employed instead of an LLC with the hospital, became fully employed. Ultimately, the CEO at the time wanted that to be the lead role to be president, report directly to him, and then have, more leadership underneath of me that reported up to me. So, through that time, I kept my continuity practice and tried to juggle all those different roles. And then about 2011, I had a job offer to move to 100% administrative in Missoula, Montana, Community Medical Center. And I took that role on a little larger group with the same idea to continue to grow the group, expand the footprint regionally, and more interesting actually was start to develop more innovative care with fully integrated patient-centered medical home with social workers, case management, pharmacy resources integrated into the practices. About a year into that, the CMO for the hospital retired, and I took on that role as well, which brought case management, social work, pastoral care, which was fascinating, all the medical staff, functionality, quality risk, and in addition to the job, running the medical group. And that was, an awesome opportunity, particularly with taking on case management and social work for the entire system of care, and then integrating that together with the outpatient side. We were able to reduce, readmissions down to single digit numbers, 30-day readmission rates, less than 5%, because of the integration between the inpatient and the outpatient side. And that was an awesome opportunity, a little busy, but an awesome opportunity. The hospital was sold to a consortium with a regional care and Billings Clinic in about 2016, and then started doing more for a larger regional group until the final leadership change, for me anyway, with LifePoint Health coming in 2019. I elected to change position here and started at Blue Cross as chief medical officer in November 2019. So the one of the things I learned in spades in the prior years is if there was a funding source for innovative care, then it was then people were interested in supporting that and approaching that. And so when the opportunity came up with some friends that I've known here at Blue Cross for 20 plus years to take on this role, I said, well, maybe it's time to make a change in my career path and see if I can do more on the payer side and help influence payment streams for different innovative programs. And it's been a good transition. It's been a really good transition. It's been an interesting
career. Let me ask, it sounds like it's actually a magnificent career, full practice and fully constantly learning and evolving as a professional and as a person. Talk about, you know, traditionally the peers versus the providers have been like the Hatfields versus the McCoys, the Harvard versus the Yales, and so forth. What was it like transitioning to being working full-time for a payer where it had been such a gradual evolution of relationships that it didn't feel like very different at all? Tell us a little bit about that transition from provider and working always for providers on the provider side to working for a payer.
It's had, you know, moments that you think, wow, there's a huge gap of fundamental understanding on either side of the continent between the two. And so bridging that understanding has been valuable. You know, for me, it's been certainly valuable for the team here. And as they've got a fuller understanding of what it's like to be, in the trenches, if you will, you know, helping run a hospital, running a medical group, what's the day in the life look like for a hospitalist, what it looks like for, you know, a rank and file physician in the offices. So that translational understanding has been great. I tell folks that in many, many respects, I feel like I've moved to another English-speaking country. It's got a very different dialect. All the words are the same. None of the acronyms mean the same thing. And so you're trying to catch up with the language barrier. And that's been one of the harder parts than understanding, you know, at a very different level what the product is that you're selling as opposed to that you're working under with the different layers of permissioning. That's been, you know, a fairly uphill climb in terms of understanding. But the role, has been, very valuable. You know, the use case scenario of COVID, you know, now changing how we're looking, how we're, how you're going to fund or pay for or support, you know, any of those other euphemisms for working with, you know, your provider groups. It's been really valuable to have been in this place to help with, you know, the understanding, on the insurance side as to what this looks like on the provider side. So it's been good. It's a different, the acronyms are just as many and just as obscure. And you need a dictionary, honestly, to kind of follow along in a conversation, which, you know, gives you the insight to what it's like if you're a layperson talking with a doctor. It's very, very good empathetic opportunity of learning. So,
and Dr. Wechner, let me ask you this question. Top three priorities as chief medical officer. In the old days on the provider side, somebody would have thought those top priorities are to say no as many times as possible. But you know now, serving on the payer side, that that's not really the case, that the case must be very different as chief medical officer as of a big plan. What do you view as your top three priorities, you know, now? What are your top three priorities?
Easily top priority is what are we doing innovatively on the payer side to help promote access for patients? And that seems like a pretty broad statement and odd coming from a payer, because you're right. The traditional perspective is you're putting out policies and procedures that say no, you know, so you're reducing the amount of money going out the door. And that is definitely not the case. And frankly, that's not been, you know, the behavior of this team at Blue Cross. Even the years before this, I wouldn't have even considered coming this direction unless I knew, you know, where this team and really HCS MSC is looking is, what are we doing to make sure that we can enhance access to, you know, for, you know, now I call them members instead of patients. They're still patients to me. How do you improve, you know, access opportunities for patients? And, you know, COVID, you know, the COVID crisis has helped really generate a whole different appetite towards, you know, different, you know, alternative visits, like, you know, a phone only visit, like, you know, telemedicine, which we've had in Montana for many years, but really was very underutilized. And so a lot of my work here is some innovative planning that we have on a couple of fronts with some different, you know, products and teleplatforms that are very intentionally connecting Montana physicians to their Montana patients. As we know from our outcome studies with our patient-centered medical home data, that the more that we get patients, you know, in a primary care home, managed by a primary care home that has those pieces that I developed, you know, with the other job, you know, with case management, social work, and ambulatory pharmacy, then you start to see better outcomes. You see lower cost, which is important. You see greater satisfaction on the provider side, the member side, and you've got better utilization. So it's not about saying no so that nobody comes see the doctor. It really is about how do you help the patient get the care they need early and as often as necessary. There are some opportunities to say no. I mean, unfortunately, that is part of the reality. And it's a little different world, you know, seeing some of the things that do come through that you think, wow, why would anybody, you know, think that that's something that's good to do for a patient? So some very, 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 you know, experimental sorts of, you know, treatments or therapies that really have no, you know, if we live in an evidence-based world, which we do, then there really does need to be good evidence to support, you know, that approach, that procedure, that device, et cetera, et cetera. So that's been part of the learning curve is there are appropriate times to say no. And part of that is if it's an unproven therapy, and at the end of the day, you know, we get held to our quality measures as well, and patients, you know, member satisfaction, then there is that yin and yang for this role for interfacing with the rest of the member, the rest of the provider community. But, for, you know, number one priority is what are we doing to work on access, you know, so enhancing telemedicine functionality, working on, and it's been one of the gratifying pieces is they've asked and said, gee, Dave, what would you recommend what we do in terms of payment for these services? And I'm providing that direct input that's being followed. So those are, you know, those are the big things. I want to see PCMH become a greater application. And what I do know, having run a PCMH program and with my prior job, you really need to have those other courses, you know, compensed. You need, if you're going to put a social worker in or a licensed clinical social worker into the practices, we need to figure out a way, we being the payer, needs to figure out a way to pay for that, because you do get better outcomes and better satisfaction. As groups are being more aggressive on depression screening, and as I was leaving my former job, we were doing suicide screening at the door, you were finding cases that had a plan within days of killing themselves, which is exactly what you saw from the statistics for suicide, that the most successful suicides have seen a physician within 3 weeks of their completed suicide. So if we're putting resources into the office to address that, then we need to pay for it. And that's been, you know, again, that's part of the overriding, you know, drive towards access for patients. So those are my priorities.
Thank you very, very much. And take a moment and talk about the current situation with COVID in Montana. What are you seeing with COVID-19 in Montana?
So Montana's been a little slower in terms of, you know, number of cases and number of tests, you know, et cetera. So to date, and I looked at the numbers, they come out each day at 10. So to date, we've had 1,800 cases that are positive. Represents maybe a little less than 2% of the total number of tests. We've had 32 deaths, which is one of the lowest in the U.S. What's interesting of those 32, 13 occurred in two post-acute facilities. And, you know, so you're seeing kind of similar sorts of you know, people at risk that are passing. Our hospitalization rate really hasn't done much. It's staying kind of, you know, between, in the last couple of weeks, between 20 statewide to 28 at a height. What happened, you know, we were in a phase two restriction now, so we've liberalized, you know, some of the gathering, you know, different businesses are open. The state had stayed in a quarantine until June 1, and so anybody coming from out of state had to quarantine for 14 days. That opened up June 1, and we've, you know, concurrently we're able to do more testing. And so we've seen a, you know, day over day, it's a marked rise in the number of positive tests. So we've had a couple of days now in the high 80s for positive tests, but the hospitalization rate hasn't changed much, and the death rate's been slow, except for the nursing home deaths. The individual cities have had different sorts of mandates on masks or no masks. The governor's office isn't wanting to make a statewide mandate yet, leaving it up to the municipalities to govern that. The Indian reservations have done a really good job about recognizing they're at risk because of, you know, age, you know, concurrent illnesses, living situations with multifamily dwelling, and then access to care isn't necessarily as good as some of the other places. So most of them have gone into much stronger quarantine than the rest of the state. And I think that's made a difference. They've got a number of positives, but they aren't getting the deaths that you're seeing in other parts of the U.S. So it's been, you know, day to day, you're watching numbers. You know, I'm talking to colleagues across the state to get a sense where they are for preparedness, you know, for hospital beds, ICU beds, you know, protective, you know, equipment, et cetera. And things are okay right now, but we are seeing more cases, but we're also doing a lot more testing. But we're not seeing much of a rise in hospitalization yet. Most of the hospitals have gone back to elective surgeries a while back now. So it's not as desperate as other parts of the United States. But the big question is, as we're seeing every day, we have more cases, you know, are we going to end up with more hospitalizations at some point? So, and answer's out on that.
Thank you very much. And so you've had this great and interesting career. Take a moment and give people three pieces of advice for either leadership or for the career journey.
Yeah. You know, career journey, you know, some of this was, you know, right place, right time, right people around you. That was helpful. But I think bigger than that was a bigger interest in how do you fix, or how do you identify, or how do you develop, you know, programs or different care? Because all the work I've done really has been around different care pathways. And improving access. And so that's, you know, so when somebody asks you to volunteer for, you know, a hospital board or a committee, you know, those are valuable moments to take. See, is that something that you're really interested in? You know, leading people is substantially harder than seeing patients. I have more sleepless nights wondering about program development than I did, you know, about patient care. I have plenty of sleepless nights with patient care, particularly doing obstetrics for 19 years. Lots of sleepless nights, but it's harder, you know, trying to move people, to inspire, direct, and help see a program from start to finish. So early on, doing lots of committee work is really worthwhile. Some education along the way that's different than just standard medical education. I took advantage of, it was then called, you know, the American College of Physician Executives, and ended up doing over the course of several years about 300 credit hours. That was my CME was in, you know, leadership. And what you learn along the way is one of the most important pieces for leadership is understanding who you are. What are your strengths? What are your weaknesses? And overplayed strength becomes a weakness. And how are you intentionally thinking about, you know, how you lead, how you interact, You don't get to have an offstage moment anymore as leader, because you are always under the microscope. And so how is that going to fit into how you, you know, live your life personally and professionally? Those are important concepts to think about before you jump into, you know, wanting to lead. And leading doesn't mean you get to make decisions. It means that you get to help folk, you know, help on strategic development and growth, but making decisions isn't necessarily part of leadership. So ultimately it's a piece of it, but that's not the biggest part of it. So that's one. Second is, be kind to yourself. This is hard. You need to develop a skin of Teflon. You're going to take shots from people that you didn't really expect to take shots from. And I watched lots of physician leaders, you know, get blown up the first time they have a friend, you know, get mad at them and jump at them because they've now identified themselves as a leader. You need to just take it as data. It's hard to do, but you need to get a thick skin of Teflon and just take it as data, move on, survive to fight another day. And if it doesn't feel good, then, you know, maybe it's not what you want to do. But being kind to yourself, finding the Teflon, and then scheduling time for the things that matter, because if you don't, they don't happen. So that's family. You still plan to raise a family, stay married, and have, you know, two kids graduate from college. It's really easy to devote all your time to a professional career. You do need to make that a priority, because that ultimately will give you your, and, you know, when this is all said and done, you're going to look back and you'll wonder and glow about how your family's progressed more than your career. So at least that's true for me. So those are the main things. But really, if you're getting started, you should get started. Get started with, you know, join some boards, join some committees. Leadership's a lot about going to meetings. It's not a lot about making decisions. So learning that and understanding that and how your role in that fits is important. So.
Well, Dr. Wechner, just a great pleasure to visit with you today. Great thoughts, great advice, just a very great pleasure. Fascinating transition and career all the way through, and just great advice. So thank you very much for joining us today, Dr. Wechner.
You're welcome.
What a pleasure
visiting
you. Thank you
for asking. Yeah.